want to open this episode in a little bit of an unusual way. And it feels a little bit overdramatic to call it a confession, but I think that's the closest thing to what it is. Maybe it's a helpful and personal application of the Tao Te Ching that I'm processing out loud. Maybe it's just a personal lesson that I need to learn by putting it out there. There's even the chance that it's maybe just the shadow side of my ego trying to help me feel better about some things without actually dealing with them. That's a possibility, but hopefully you'll get where I'm coming from here. And hopefully this will be helpful. Chapter 71 of the Tao Te Ching says, "Not knowing is true knowledge. Presuming to know is a disease. First, realize that you are sick, and then you can move toward health. The master is her own physician. She has healed herself of all knowing. Thus, she is truly whole." Ignorance is part of life, and the Tao Te Ching repeatedly reminds us not only that that is true, but that we must accept our ignorance, even embrace it, in order to become holistically healthy individuals. Theological mystics, in the most Christian sense of that term, throughout history have said the same thing, and this is what lies at the heart of apophatic theology, or the theology of mystery, the theology of unknowing. You see, the danger of publishing a podcast like this is that people might get the idea that I actually know what I'm talking about when it comes to embracing the mystery and living in harmony with it. As I share the thoughts and connections that I've made through this study, that doesn't necessarily mean that I've fully integrated them or even understood them. Honestly, in so many ways, I'm still ignorant about my ignorance, so to speak, and the Tao Te Ching calls this a sickness. In commenting on this chapter, Abbot George Burke wrote some things, and they really convicted me and kind of cut to my heart. I won't say that I'm, as he says, a false guru pretending to be enlightened, but still this passage spoke to me as someone who, in a sense, tries to share and educate about the Tao Te Ching. He wrote, "It is truly a mental spiritual sickness to try and deceive others in claiming that we know something when we do not know it at all. The worst are the false gurus that pretend to be enlightened and gain disciples through their pretense, teaching ignorance rather than knowledge." Now, that's a bit overdramatic, but it did speak to me. And I want to say, if you enjoy listening to this podcast, if you find it helpful or educational, if it helps you become more contemplative, if it changes any of your perspectives, I am truly so grateful for that. But I want to share, I want you to know that me being an external processor, I'm honestly in the midst of discovering and processing anything that I share on this show just as much as you are. I'm right in the middle of it, and I don't want to pretend that I've mastered anything. At the worst, my words would be woefully misguided, but I think that I know that even at their absolute best, they are really nothing more than what the Buddha called a finger pointing at the moon. And sometimes, and I think so many times, I get so focused on trying to make sure that this intellectual and verbal finger of mine is pointing at the right spot on the moon, and then the moon itself kind of blurs into the background of my vision, and I'm hardly cognizant of it at all. Now, maybe this goes without saying, and as I said, maybe this is possibly just a manifestation of the shadow side of my ego, trying to cover some things up, even as I think I'm bringing them to light. And I have to do some soul searching on that. But I want to be clear that if this show is informative, if it's transformative in any way, it's only because I'm sharing what I'm in the process of figuring out. And I do believe that the Holy Spirit is the source of any transformative power in any of that, for myself or for you. I don't speak these words as a teacher. I'm sharing them as a learner who's found some powerful truth in the Tao Te Ching, which, as I always say, is that ancient book of Chinese wisdom and spirituality that did not draw me away from faith in Christ, but right now is helping me immensely in my process of trying to hold on to it. Hi, my name's Corey Farr. This is episode 56 of A Christian Reads the Tao Te Ching. In this series, we work through the Tao Te Ching from beginning to end. There are 81 chapters, and we talk about all of the parallels and connections that I've seen between this little book that I discovered a few years ago and my own Christian faith. There are so many connections, ways that the book can inform us and help us to grow. And this has just been an awesome journey for me to be on. If you haven't listened before, as always, the best place to go is back to episode one. Give sort of an introduction to the series, an outline or an overview of what we're doing and what the Tao Te Ching is. You can also head over to my blog at coreyfarr.com. There's a link in the show notes, and there's a series of articles there that kind of follows the first few dozen episodes of the series before I stopped publishing them or stopped staying up to date on them. But those will give you the overview of each of those episodes if you're more of a reader. In today's episode, though, we're going to be looking at Chapter 71, which, in my opinion, is one of the most cryptic and just utterly fascinating chapters of the Tao Te Ching. We're going to be hearing from a lot of different translations today because at times they're going to seem to differ quite a bit. And one reason for this is just how, to put it frankly, how weird this chapter is, or at least how weird the literal translation sounds. Stephen Addis and Stanley Lombardo kind of stuck to a very literal translation here, and this is what we end up getting. Know not knowing, that is K-N-O-W, not knowing, supreme. Not know knowing, faulty. Only faulting faults is faultless. The sage is faultless by faulting faults, and so is without fault. Now, we're going to hear from a number of translations that help make that more clear. But one thing that is clear at the even from that is that this chapter continues on the theme of knowledge, which we talked about last week. And it really focuses on the importance of knowing that there is so much that we don't know, and the danger of presuming that we know everything. Now, this is a really basic concept, but it has so many applications. And so we're going to start from sort of the most mundane and move up to the most profound. And that might mean, and at least in my opinion, some of the best content here is going to come in the last part of the episode. You can be the judge of that, but either way, I definitely had the most fun and also the biggest challenge writing the third part. And so first we'll talk about applying this chapter just to knowledge in the most common usage, just learning and personal development. Then we're going to take a look at this in the context of social relations and the echo chamber society we live in and how knowledge and ignorance plays into that. And then finally, we'll take things to the deepest level of spiritual growth, which I think is both the most important way to read this chapter, and as always, the one that requires the most work. And so let's jump right in by hearing Jafu Feng's translation now, which is kind of my default starting point, and then we will get started. Knowing ignorance is strength. Ignoring knowledge is sickness. If one is sick of sickness, then one is not sick. The sage is not sick because he is sick of sickness. Therefore, he is not sick. As I said, the most mundane way of approaching this chapter is just to apply it simply to just actual knowledge of facts and information and skills and things like that. Ron Hogan's translation is helpful here because it's very down to earth. He says, if you know, but it may be down to earth, but it's profound. I want to add that. If you know what you don't know, you're doing great. If you don't know what you don't know, then you're sick. The only way to get rid of that sickness is to be sick of it. The masters aren't sick because they got sick of being sick. Now, we can easily apply this in a very straightforward way to the concept of learning and personal development. The kind of people we call lifelong learners are never satisfied that they've learned all there is to know. The cliche that the more you learn, the more you realize how much you don't actually know is really true in almost any place that I can think of when it comes to studies. Those who think that they know it all, they're not just annoying, but they're actually destined to be intellectually stagnant, or what this chapter calls intellectually sick. Now, to be fair, I don't think this is exactly what Lao Tzu had in mind when he wrote this, but it's a point worth making. And it's helpful here to look to Derek Lin's commentary because he really highlights this and focuses on the more sort of down-to-earth side of this chapter. And then he even brings it a step further by pointing to the way that we have to know ourselves in order to achieve wholeness. And so I'll read from his commentary at length here. He says, "To know that you do not know means recognizing your own ignorance. This is a good thing because it motivates you to continue seeking answers and keeps you from becoming presumptuous and arrogant. The opposite of this is being ignorant, but assuming that you possess knowledge. This is a flaw that many of us have. It is only when we see a problem clearly and recognize that we need to do something about it that we can begin to free ourselves of it. Sages, or wise people, or the masters, as the Tao Te Ching, as different translations call them, they are human too, and they make mistakes just like everyone else. What makes them different is that they look at themselves with the clarity of detachment, whereas most of us are blind to our own faults. Because they are naturally humble, sages do not automatically assume they must be correct. When they recognize that they've made a mistake or manifested a problem, they take action to address the issue. People who know that they do not know and take steps to learn will eventually acquire the knowledge they need. Similarly, if we can monitor ourselves, recognize our faults, and work on correcting them, we will ultimately rid ourselves of them." Now, it's really cool that we can directly apply this mysterious and kind of cryptic chapter somewhat directly to just how we learn, but it obviously goes much deeper than that. And so we're gonna ease into it by taking it a step up now into the realm of our social interactions. And then, as I said, finally, we'll take this to the deepest level of spiritual growth and things of the divine, we might say. But as we transition, let's hear from J.H. MacDonald's translation of Chapter 71, which gives a little bit of a different spin. "Knowing you don't know is wholeness. Thinking you know is a disease. Only by recognizing that you have an illness can you move to seek a cure. The master is whole because she sees her illnesses and treats them, and thus is able to remain whole." I'm going to look to another commentary here, as I often do, because this one's just so helpful. Oliver Benjamin, he takes a very different spin, but it's also very down to earth. And he focuses on the massive information overload that we experience on a daily basis. This is something I've talked about a few times on the show before. So if you've listened to a lot of episodes, this may be sort of a recap. But we are hit from so many sides with so many facts and opinions every time we open any app on our phone, any social media, anything at all, even when we just see a news notification. And it's becoming more and more difficult to actually determine what are facts, because everything has a spin. And plus, the heavy politicization and polarization of nearly every important topic that's worth discussing today means that our confirmation bias has been working overtime to make sure that we have a hard time distinguishing between what actually is fact and then what separates fact from opinion. Now, Benjamin writes in a way far better than I could say it here, so I'm going to read a section from his commentary and then continue my own thoughts. But he says, "In a world awash with information, both bad and good, the truly powerful person is not the one who has the most of it, but the one who can separate the smart from the spurious. Even more so, the truly mighty is he who knows what he doesn't know and yet still needs to learn. Studies have shown again and again that people commonly mistake their uninformed assumptions for genuine knowledge. Not only are humans reluctant to test their acquired hypotheses, but we're also loath to admit when we don't even have any hypothesis in the first place. Faced with the vertigo of our own ignorance," which is just a beautiful phrase, "the vertigo of our own ignorance, we impulsively fashion slapdash stopgaps to seal ourselves off from the void. As we've seen, one thing that Taoism counsels above all is that the void is not something we should reflexively endeavor to fill. It could be said that the central training ritual of Taoism is a sort of housekeeping of the head to clear debris and create space in our minds so that we can better assess its contours and caveats. To sum that up, the bottom line here is that we have to learn to be aware that there are things that we don't know in order to develop the healthy level of skepticism that we need to be spiritually, emotionally, and relationally healthy in a world that is overloaded with information and incredibly polarized. The echo chamber syndrome that I've talked about so much and criticized so much here, combined with a very heavy-handed form of cancel culture that's developing, and then a trigger finger reaction to block people on social media or even just in real life, means that so many of us live in these bubbles where we simply don't know what we don't know because we're not even hearing it. And this is a perfectly fertilized soil for the confirmation bias that we all have built in to flourish and then cut us off from anyone who disagrees with us. And according to chapter 71, this is a sickness. And really, the only way to start the healing process is to get sick of being sick. Now, maybe that's a wake-up moment we have where we realize that our side is not as perfect as we thought, or that their logic isn't as airtight as we thought. And maybe it means that an important relationship we have has been damaged in a seemingly irreparable way, and the emotional blow that we take from that makes us wake up to the idea that there has to be a better way forward. Or maybe this thing that makes us get sick of being sick is scripture. Maybe it's the Tao Te Ching. Maybe it's a word from a true, what the Tao Te Ching calls master. Whatever it is, we have to get sick of being sick. Because honestly, the world is sick right now. Now, I know it always has been, but personally, at least, I feel like more than ever, I'm just being slapped in the face every time I go online or get a news notification with just how sick things are. And for those Americans in the audience, this is especially prevalent for us, I think, every 4 years, if you know what I mean, and I'm not talking about the Olympic Games there. But honestly, it's carried over from just election season, and it's taken over our culture. And for the non-American listeners, again, as always, I'm speaking from my context, but I've also experienced this to a large degree in the country of Lebanon where I live, which is incredibly polarized right now as well. But as I said, this chapter goes so much deeper than just personal development or how to deal with living in an information overloaded world. I don't want to say that these things are not spiritual. They are deeply spiritual because, as Rob Bell has so accurately said and titled a book, everything is spiritual. But I think that if we want to get the closest to what Lao Tzu was getting at here, we really have to approach this chapter from the perspective of spiritual growth. And so as we transition into that, let's hear from Joseph Owl's translation, which is helpful and gives another perspective and kind of sets us up for that. When you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, you'll be on the path to healing. When you stop being an expert in matters you know nothing about, you'll be healthy. Know the symptoms of your disease, and your dis-ease will transform into ease. So time to bring in the Bible. The word knowledge comes up very early in the Bible, and surprisingly, or somewhat surprisingly, it is not at all in a positive light. In Genesis 3, we have the very well-known and infamous temptation of Eve to eat of the forbidden tree, which is somewhat perplexingly not the tree of rebellion, it's not the tree of ego, it's not the tree of idolatry, but it is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, the symbolism here, let me take a rabbit trail. The symbolism has always been a little bit confusing to me, or intriguing. Of course, the temptation is clarified in the serpent's side note, which is that when you eat of it, you will be like God, knowing good and evil. But this raises so many questions of its own when we consider sort of the grand mythology of the universe. And I use that word in a positive light, as so many theologians have taken to doing. Just because it's mythology doesn't mean it's not true in a deeper sense. But that's a whole other subject that's a rabbit trail off of a rabbit trail. But by the Genesis account, this is the beginning of creation. And so what evil was there to be known before it? What knowledge of evil could be had? Now, the first thing that comes to mind with that question is the equally infamous story of Lucifer, the angel of light who rebelled against God and then was cast down prior to the creation of the earth, thereby becoming Satan. But this mythology, and then again, I'm using that in an affirmative sense and not a negative one or a critical one. This mythology is based on interpretations of a few scattered passages, and it's combined with creative embellishments that were added by authors and poets over thousands of years. Now, it may or may not be true, this Lucifer myth, but it certainly is not clearly spelled out in the text, at least not in the way that I was led to believe when I was growing up. Hearing this story as part of the biblical truth in everything from Bible class to the bedtime stories that my grandma used to tell me as a six-year-old. And yes, that's really true. She would tell me about Lucifer. But anyway, this story, that wasn't the only thing she told me about, by the way. She's not that crazy. But anyway, this story really helps make sense of the evil that could have existed prior to creation, the knowledge of evil. But we haven't even gotten into the discussion of how we define evil, and that's even a deeper subject. But fortunately for both of us, this is a rabbit trail, as I said, and really it needs to come to an end. But I just found the thoughts interesting of this knowledge of good and evil. But let's come back onto the main road here and talk about how in the first few pages of the first book of the biblical canon, we have an introduction to the danger of knowledge. Now, throughout the books that are held sacred by Jews and Christians for thousands of years now, we see a sometimes ambivalent relationship with knowledge. There's this echo or this recognition that knowledge is not inherently good and it's not inherently bad. Knowledge of God and his ideal way, or we might call it the Tao for humanity, which is often called wisdom, this is always good. This kind of knowledge, it loves God, it loves creation, and it loves other people. It's the kind of knowledge that we find so often in the Tao Te Ching as well, although it's in a bit of a different form and a different paradigm, but it's the same in many ways. On the other hand, though, the kind of knowledge that seeks to expand one's ego is always evil knowledge. And perhaps we might say the forbidden fruit represented this kind of ego-expanding knowledge. And we see this in so many ways. We see it in the architectural ingenuity that we see in the Tower of Babel, this ego-expanding knowledge, this use of great creativity and study for an egocentric project. In Isaiah chapter 47, the prophet calls out Babylon for thinking that her knowledge had made her great. And then he kind of lampoons her that all of the knowledge that Babylon had did absolutely nothing to warn her of the catastrophic fall that was just around the corner. We also see this in the way that Jesus critiqued the overly intellectually nitpicky members of the scribes and Pharisees, the ones who failed to see the forest for the trees, so to speak. And his rebuke was not because of their knowledge, but because of how they used it, or rather how they misused it and even failed to use it. He said, "Woe to you experts in the law, for you have taken away the key of knowledge. You yourselves did not enter, and you hindered those who were entering." That's in Luke chapter 11, verse 52. Now all of these, the knowledgeable architects behind the Tower of Babel and the knowledgeable experts who categorized and codified first century Jewish law, they're all examples of good knowledge that's being used in a way that is potentially very good, but the inner disposition of the heart, the trajectory it was on, the application made it wrong and even made it evil. Architecture, which is like, we can use this to say like all forms of art can be worship, truly. And knowledge of the scriptures and pursuit of understanding the divine is certainly not a bad thing. But, as we've heard, knowledge is power, and as the famous quote goes, with great power comes great responsibility. And just as power is neither inherently good or bad, neither is knowledge, and they go together. Now, if we look at another insightful passage from the Bible, knowledge does not just come with potential, it can also be a source of great pain. Ecclesiastes, which I want to take some time to look at now, depressingly but very insightfully points out that just about every human impulse has a shadow side. And the book says, in much wisdom there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. As I was thinking about this, I thought the whole book of Ecclesiastes is in some ways sort of a Taoist work, or at least it's very compatible. You could almost make it into sort of a Taoist autobiography in a sense. And as I pulled out that one verse and then I started to dive deeper into Ecclesiastes over the last couple days, this idea occurred to me. So it's still a bit half-baked, but I really think it's just worth a lot of consideration and study. For those who've read Ecclesiastes, he starts with the very famous lament, "Meaningless, meaningless, everything is meaningless." Or in the King James, "Vanity, vanity, everything is vanity." Now the word here in the Hebrew is hevel, and it literally means a vapor, a smoke, or a breath. And it's most often translated as vanity or meaningless. Every other time it's used throughout the scripture, not every, but most of them, it's going to be called vanity, even in the non-King James versions. But that doesn't quite capture it. To say that life is hevel is to say that it's fleeting, it's temporary, it's obscure in nature, like a vapor or a smoke or breath. It's not saying it's inherently insignificant and lacking in meaning. But the majority of this little book is explaining all the ways that the author tried to grasp at this vapor or hold on to this smoke, this hevel, in order to find meaning and pleasure in his life. He looked to wealth and status and career and so many different pursuits, and yes, even to knowledge. The author writes, "I said to myself, 'Look, I have increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I've experienced much of wisdom and knowledge.' Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly, but I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind." Now, Ecclesiastes is famous for these kind of, I guess you could call them laments or frustrations. And as you read it, they can begin to feel very depressing. But they are beautifully written, first of all, and they point towards a beautiful conclusion of the book. And if you stick with it and you really see it in the big picture, it's hard to really imagine a more Taoist conclusion. And the idea here is that accept that life is out of your control. You see, as the book of Ecclesiastes rounds its final bend, the author fully accepts that life is hevel. He doesn't say it directly, but you can see that he has accepted that life is a vapor, or it's a breath, or it's a wisp of smoke. And rather than trying to control it or force it to bend to our will, the author recognizes that we just have to go with the flow, as I've said so many times on the show before, that we are to rejoice and take delight in our youth before we grow old. We have to let go of anxiety and always, always, always remember the Creator. And so the author, as he, in this final chapter, he gives a laundry list of depressing and cataclysmic events, basically describing how our whole world is inevitably falling apart. And he says, before all of these things, he says, enjoy the days of your youth. But he surrounds this list of cataclysmic events with remember the Creator. See, no longer is he trying to control life, but he's looking to the eternal Tao, the eternal way, the Creator. And so he ends the book, interestingly, in the last few verses, in the same way that he started it. He says, hevel, hevel, everything is hevel. And I hope you can see by now, I think meaningless doesn't really capture the idea here. But as he says the same words a second time at the end of the book, this context, this development, this journey that he's taken us on, gives the sentence an entirely different implication. The author from chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes was frustrated. He was tired of trying to make something out of hevel. But the author in Ecclesiastes chapter 12 is, in a sense, at peace with this. And he's recognized what truly matters, which is reverence and commitment to God. Now, going back to Joseph Owl's translation of chapter 71, I think that really just goes hand in hand with this sort of semi-biographical work of Ecclesiastes. Owls writes, when you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, you'll be on the path to healing. When you stop being an expert in matters that you know nothing about, you will be healthy. Know the symptoms of your disease, and your dis-ease will transform into ease. I mean, we could pair that right alongside the book of Ecclesiastes, and it just, you see Owls's words sort of implemented in the journey of the author of Ecclesiastes. And I think, as Stephen Mitchell's translation says, that there really is hope for the Ecclesiastes man or woman in all of us. And this hope is to be healed from our wrong ways of, quote-unquote, knowing. Mitchell writes, the master is her own physician. She has healed herself of all knowing. Thus, she is truly whole. Now, we could take issue, and I would take issue with the fact that we can be our own physicians and heal ourselves fully. But there is a sense of responsibility here, and there needs to be, and this is where I think Mitchell maybe overstates and maybe misses a central Taoist concept. There needs to be a partnering with the Tao, or a partnering with, I would say, the Holy Spirit, in order to truly heal ourselves. But he does capture the fact that there is an active role that we take in that, this unknowing. Now, the final passage of scripture that I want to look at today is just one sentence from 1 Corinthians. And if I didn't tell you it was from 1 Corinthians or from the Bible, I could easily pass this off as a line from the Tao Te Ching. It says, if anyone supposes that he knows anything, he has not yet known as he ought to know. I'll say that again. If anyone supposes that he knows anything, he has not yet known as he ought to know. Now, if we look at J. Legge's translation of chapter 71, it really complements this verse really well. And I think it makes a lot more sense of the cryptic line that Fung translates as, if one is sick of sickness, then one is not sick. It's not entirely clear at first, but I love how Legge interprets that. He says, not to know, and yet think we do know, is a disease. It is simply by being pained at the thought of having this disease that we are preserved from it. I think there's something beautiful that ties together both Paul's words in Corinthians and these words from chapter 71 of the Tao Te Ching. And the thing that ties them together is that we must, in a sense, totally embrace our ignorance. Now, that's not to say that ignorance in itself is good, but the fact is, ignorance is reality. And we have to recognize it. And if recognizing our ignorance, if it's not a virtue in itself, if it's not a virtue, then at least it is an essential step on the road to virtue. Now, I started this episode with a confession of sorts of my own ignorance. And when I was dealing with it and thinking about it and processing it, I felt all the frustration and the sadness and the guilt of the author of Ecclesiastes at the beginning of his book. It's something that's been running through my mind for a while. Am I faking it? Am I an imposter? Am I trying to pass off that I know things I don't know? Is there any, I don't even know how to put words to it, but I think you get where I'm coming from. I was frustrated. But as I'm coming to a close in preparing this episode, and as in the last week or two, I've made some pretty significant changes in my own spiritual disciplines, and I've really adjusted my perspective on some things, which is a whole other story that maybe I'll share in an exclusive for the patron donors. But anyway, after these changes, I feel a bit closer to the author's tone at the end of Ecclesiastes. Indeed, life is a vapor. Indeed, we are ignorant of so many things. But if we can learn to accept that, if we can search for God in the vapor, search for God in the ignorance, rather than trying to find God by defeating the ignorance or controlling the vapor, then we have made the first step on the road to spiritual transformation. And all I can say now is that I hope that that is true, because that's really where all my bets are currently placed. And I'm holding on to that hope with everything I have, which is not just a wishful thinking hope. It's the theological hope It's the confident expectation that God will move based on his faithfulness in the past, no matter how distant that faithfulness may feel at times for me. Life is indeed a vapor. We are indeed ignorant, but time and time again throughout history and throughout my own life, God has indeed been faithful. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. I know I started a bit differently and ended a bit differently today than I normally do, but I'm happy with how it turned out, and I feel like I learned a lot personally in the process of preparing and even in the process of recording this. As I said in the beginning, I'm very much an external processor. If you're also enjoying the show, thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. You can feel free to reach out to me anytime with thoughts or questions or feedback by heading on over to my blog and clicking the contact button. The link again to that is in the show notes. And also in the show notes, you'll see a link to the Patreon site. If you're not familiar with Patreon, it's a way to support creators or artists or any form of content creator with a small monthly donation, which gets you benefits, which depend on the creator, and helps support their work. My Patreon, you can sign up for anywhere from $2 to $15 a month. There's a few different tiers with different benefits, a Facebook group, all the way up to a monthly conversation with me or, you know, video calls with me at the $15 a month tier. But probably the most significant benefit, I'd say, is just at $5 a month and up, you get access to a podcast feed, an RSS feed that you can put in any podcast player app that you use, where you'll get early access to the episodes as well as a bi-weekly exclusive that I do, which tends to dive deeper into either a totally unrelated topic or something that was sparked in one of the episodes that I dive deeper into. It's a lot less scripted or it's a lot less, it's more off the cuff, it's more external processing. I just kind of come with just a handful of notes and quotes, as I call them, and dive into it from there. And it's really been a great process for me to process things, and I think it's been great to hear from my Patreon donors as well. So if you're interested in that, head on over to the Patreon site and check it out. If not, just happy to have you with me on the journey. And as always, I will wish you with from all of my heart, grace and peace.